You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for The Weekend, and joining us today is Mr. Dylan Corbett. Dylan is the executive director of the Hope Border Institute, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that institute, plus their work here on the border and some of the other work that they've been doing in conjunction with other organizations. Dylan, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Now, let's talk first of all about the Hope Border Institute, because a lot of people may not be familiar with it. And as you mentioned, you came here from Washington to help put this together. If you wouldn't mind sharing with us what the Institute's all about.
Sure. I did come from Washington, and I came as the first director of the Hope Border Institute. I came out of a passion to get involved on border issues. I'd worked on border issues and immigration for several years in the advocacy world in Washington, D.C., but this was an opportunity to work here on the ground. The Hope Border Institute, its aim is to get the community, especially the faith community, working with churches and faith communities along the border and across the border in El Paso, in Las Cruces, and in Ciudad Juarez, to get them more involved in justice, in issues of poverty, and in building a better border. So we've been involved in the last couple of years on a number of issues, from the environment to poverty, but most especially given the political climate now and everything that's been going on, especially on the area of immigration.
So let's rewind a little bit. Immigration has always been an issue on the border and in the Southwest particularly, and it's not just something that's new. Immigration has gone back years. So tell us a little bit about, let's rewind, as I mentioned, and when you first got here, what are some of the things that you saw that needed to be addressed?
Sure. Broadly speaking, you're right that immigration has long been an important and critical issue here on the border. And the what has been going on, I think, and you see this especially on the southern border, is that policies to deal with immigration, when they're coming from disconnected places like Washington, D.C., or even Austin, Texas, which is far removed from the border, these policies often don't address the real problems of immigration. They don't address the problems of communities. So one of the reasons the Hope Border Institute was formed, actually, was to get people who live in the border to get more involved in formulating those policies so that their needs, their aspirations could be reflected in the policies which shape our region. So what are some examples of how policies have not addressed the real problems here on the border? Well, I think if you think of things like what's been going on for several decades, as you said, the criminalization of migrants or the militarization of our border, those are things which have been progressively growing as problems on the border and affecting our communities. Those problems really don't exist in some, the policies, the problems that they're intended to address really don't exist. And so that militarization of our border, the criminalization of our migrant community is really having negative impacts for us here in the community of El Paso, of Las Cruces, and along the entire border. And I think that when I first came here, that was very evident to me. And we sort of, as an institute, we got our feet wet early in trying to address some of those problems. What we're seeing now, after the election of Trump, and even during the campaign, is sort of that dynamic is being has deepened. And so Trump really ran a political campaign based on the criminalization or the demonization of migrants of our border communities and based on promises to further militarize our border. So the problems have only in the last couple of months become even more consequential, and the need for our community to push back with solutions is even more important.
Please correct me if I'm wrong, but there has always been, it seems, a misconception about immigrants and immigration. And particularly when as you mentioned, candidate Trump was running for office, he talked about Mexican immigrants and criminal, some of them that were, he alleged were criminals. And then we started seeing, well, not even just back then, but during the Obama administration, we started seeing the influx of Syrian refugees and other people. So this is not just a problem dealing with Mexico, but something that is dealing with immigrants from all over the world.
That's right. And so at the core of the campaign, of Trump's campaign, was the assertion of these things that simply aren't the case. You know, the fact that we have a law and order type immigration in this country, that's simply not true. We know, for example, that the unauthorized population under President Obama actually reached a historic low, while at the same time, President Obama, he was called by many the deporter-in-chief, the deportation numbers, almost 4 million people, that's a historic high. That was, he deported more immigrants than any other president in U.S. history. The other thing that Trump said, and this is on the first day of his campaign, is that the border was out of control. And I think that it's important to call that out, too. That's not true. That's a lie. The border has really never been more secure, whether you're looking in terms of resources or manpower. So we currently spend about $20 billion every year on immigration enforcement, on border enforcement, rather. On immigration enforcement, as a country, we spend more on immigration enforcement than on any other federal law enforcement. So that includes the FBI, that includes the Secret Service, things like the U.S. Marshals, all federal law enforcement combined. We spend more on immigration enforcement. We have more Border Patrol agents than ever. Since 2004, during the time of the Bush administration, Border Patrol agents have doubled. We now have a force of about 20,000 Border Patrol agents, 18,000 of whom are here on our southern border. And frankly, many of them simply have nothing to do because the amount of people who are coming, northbound apprehensions, is at an all-time low. In fact, if you look at Mexican immigration, for example, Mexican immigration right now is negative. That means that more people are going back to Mexico than are actually coming from Mexico. And if we look at actually who is coming, you mentioned refugees, those are women, those are children, and those are families, many of whom are fleeing really extreme situations of poverty and violence in places like Central America, like Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. Honduras and El Salvador right now are very dangerous countries. The capital of El Salvador, San Salvador, is probably the most dangerous city in the world right now outside of an active war zone. That used to be the capital of Honduras, which is still very dangerous. And in places like Guatemala, about half of the population suffers and lives in extreme poverty. So those are the people who are actually coming. And a wall, more immigration enforcement, none of that really addresses those root causes or the or fixes the reasons that people are coming.
So recently, and as you were mentioning before, with the new administration, this president has, you know, some people may say, well, he's done more to keep his campaign promises than anybody else. But then again, some people say, well, he's acting a little bit too fast. And so with that in mind, tell us a little bit about what you all had to do to kind of scramble and get everything in order. And we can talk about the discretion to deny in just a minute. But tell us about, you know, what you all had to do to kind of brainstorm and fast track.
Yeah, you're right. Trump has been acting very quickly. There's been, you know, sort of a shock and awe strategy coming out of the White House right now in terms of executive orders, new policies and new announcements. Things are very fluid and they're changing every day. And I think it's clear that Trump is acting to support with many of these policies. He's sending a strong signal to his voter base. Because if you look at the numbers of the people who voted for him, if you look at the reasons why they voted for him, his strongest base of voters came from those who are most concerned about immigration and national security. So again, if you look at the executive orders around immigration that have come out of the White House, those are based on these premises, which I've really said are not true. that we have a national security crisis on the border. We don't. Or that immigration is somehow out of control. It isn't. So with these orders, I think that what you're seeing is he's sending a message to his base. He's acting to send a message. He's acting to project an image that he's acting quickly and firmly on delivering those campaign promises. A lot of people, I think, thought after Trump was elected that many of the things that he said during the campaign were simply going to be that, things he said during the campaign rhetoric. What we're seeing, in fact, is that Trump is actually delivering on many of those promises. And that's what's troubling, because a lot of these policies will have negative consequences for our border communities and the residents who live here. So if you look at the executive orders that came out very shortly after he was inaugurated, three of them had to do with immigration. One of them had to do specifically with border issues, with border enforcement. So that's the executive order on the wall. This weekend, Secretary Kelly, who's the Secretary of Homeland Security, who's really in charge of operationalizing those executive orders, sent out some messages to the field which give those executive orders legs. So first we were dealing with the executive orders themselves, which caught a lot of us in the advocacy community, in the legal community, off guard. They were very dizzying in their seriousness, in the scope, in the magnitude. Still, I think a lot of people were hoping that that these things would take time to sort of translate into actual directives, or that we would that Congress would have to act to fund some of the initiatives. But what we saw this just this weekend is that the Department of Homeland Security is moving to act immediately on things like the wall, on moving in the direction of mass deportation, on hiring more agents. So we're taking this all very seriously, and it's something that we're working to address as we speak.
We are visiting with Dylan Corbett. Dylan is the executive director of the Hope Border Institute, and we're talking a little bit about some of the things that the Institute is doing as an advocacy group for immigrants here in the border area and other parts of the state as well. Dylan, before President Trump was elected. In fact, last summer, you all kind of got together with private attorneys, legal service providers, and other advocacy organizations here in the area to form the Borderland Immigration Council to address some of the growing abuses that were happening already.
Right. A lot of these things, again, I think we have to put in their historical perspective. So even though what Trump is doing is new and represents sort of a new chapter in border enforcement and in immigration enforcement, many of these things have been going on for a long time and they've been going along in the shadows. So if you look at our community, recently we had the arrival of new leadership for ICE, which is the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is tasked with enforcing our nation's immigration laws. The leadership in our community here in El Paso and Las Cruces in West Texas, new leadership arrived in 2015 at the end of the year. Immediately after that, the attorney community, so private attorneys, public attorneys, folks like Diocesan Migrant and Refugee Services, Las Americas Immigrant Advocacy Center, and a number of other attorneys, began to see that the enforcement had already begun to be harder, that ICE had assumed a more tougher posture towards immigrants, towards the immigrant community, and towards asylum seekers. So what did they see? They saw that more people were being deported, people who ordinarily wouldn't be deported, people who had family here, fathers who were the breadwinners for their families, that people were being put into detention more. We have a number of private detention facilities and other detention facilities here in the community. We're putting more people in detention, immigrant detention, which is essentially jail. And then we were also treating asylum seekers differently. So these are the refugees. You mentioned the refugee crisis in Syria and the Middle East. We have a refugee crisis right now in Central America. Because of the extreme poverty, the political instability, the corruption and the violence that is taking place right now in those countries. Those countries are essentially on fire, and mothers and children and families are coming up to our southern border, and they're asking for asylum. They're refugees. Traditionally, the United States has been a leader in accepting refugees across the world. Think of the Statue of Liberty, for example. We've demonstrated real commitment to accepting refugees from across the world. But what's happened on our southern border, what ICE and CBP, Customs and Border Patrol, are doing on our southern border is really something that should frighten us all, because it goes against our very identity as Americans. They are turning away asylum seekers. They're systematically discouraging and dissuading them, these mothers and children and families who are coming. So what are the things that they began to start doing more and more after the arrival of the new ICE leadership in 2015? Well, they started separating families. So families who would come from these countries to our south would be coming from situations of extreme violence. The whole family, they would separate the family. They would separate the father from the mother and the children. And that looks like it's been systematic. We've documented that that's happening. They would put the father in what's essentially jail, and the family would have separate interviews. And these are very intimidating interviews at times to determine whether they had a legitimate asylum claim. And sometimes, even though they were fleeing the same violence, sometimes the outcomes of those interviews would be different, especially, and that's because they were separated. What are some other things? They were being put into detention. So asylum seekers 10 or 15 years ago who would never be put in detention, who are not threats to our community, these folks would be put into jail-like facilities, sometimes for months, sometimes for more than a year, and they would be discouraged. Some of the folks, because they couldn't bear the conditions of a detention, started just to go back. And some of these folks are going back to very dangerous situations. So between family separation, between detention, and between a lot of these cases simply being denied, this should be startling to our community, because ICE is taking a hard line that I don't think reflects our community's values or our values as Americans.
So, Dylan, tell me a little bit about, are some of these refugees from Central America finding themselves in a difficult situation because, and correct me if I'm wrong, we've heard that Mexico is very tough on illegal immigration. So if some of them go through Mexico to come into the U.S., they may have to cross that hurdle and then after that cross another hurdle to come in here.
You're right. It can be very dangerous for these asylum seekers to cross Mexico. So first of all, they're fleeing extreme violence in their own home countries. And a lot of this violence, I think, has a lot to do with the United States, whether because of our support for regimes there during the Civil War in those countries a couple decades ago, or because of our consumption of drugs. A lot of these Central American countries have really become held hostage to narco violence or cartel violence. Gangs have really taken over their countries. And a lot of that is driven by American consumption of drugs. So they're fleeing situations like that. Then they come to Mexico. Often these folks have to pay thousands of dollars for people to guide them to get to the United States. Many of the people arriving to the border, if they're women, have experienced the trauma of crossing Mexico, traumas like sexual abuse, kidnapping. The situations that they're dealing with in transit through Mexico are shocking and horrifying. And then they're coming to our U.S. border, where we should be treating them with dignity and respect and giving them due process and giving them their right under our federal laws and under international laws to hear their asylum claims. But instead, what we're doing is intimidating, discouraging, and dissuading them. One of the asylum seekers that we interviewed for this report, she said, "You know, I faced hell there, and I came here to face hell here." She wasn't expecting to be treated with indignity. This particular person, I won't give you her name, she was fleeing cartel violence in Juarez, where we know there's been a lot of violence recently. She came to El Paso seeking refuge. She had a child, a son who was just months old. She was still breastfeeding him. And what immigration officials did was separate that woman from her child, put her in detention, and she was put there for several months before she was finally released. She missed several months of being with her child, the child, you know, a young infant child. She missed that time. That can never be replaced. And we don't know why this is happening. Again, 10 or 15 years ago, these things, we wouldn't have seen them because they don't reflect our values. But these things are getting worse. Now, with the Trump administration, we're afraid that these things, which were not standard practice, that were taking place sort of on the margins or under cover of darkness or were abuses, that these things are now just going to be standard operating procedure. We're really afraid. The memos that came out from the director, from the Department of Homeland Security this week, are frightening because the abuses, which we detail in our report, Discretion to Deny, most of these things are now simply going to become policy.
You know, so one of the things that I heard, this was during the campaign, somebody said, well, you know, people who come here from China, from Germany, wherever, European countries, and they go through the legal process and they become citizens. However, these people who are fleeing Mexico or Central America, where they make perhaps $3 a day, if that much, how can they afford to hire an attorney and how can they afford these high fees that are required to become legal citizens?
Right. And I think wherever one stands on the political spectrum, you know, if one's a Democrat or a Republican, a liberal or conservative, I think we can all agree that we want safe, orderly, humane immigration enforcement and an immigration system. And I think everyone agrees that this system is simply broken. You know, a lot of people, you know, they can trace their lineage back to immigrants who came in the 20th century from Europe, for example, countries like Germany or Italy or England or Ireland. A lot of those people were able to come and they didn't have to go through the same requirements that people had to have to go through today. They didn't have to have a relative. They didn't have to have a job offer. They didn't have to have some of the burdensome requirements. They didn't have to pay the burdensome fees that we have now. Today, if you want to come to the United States legally, the process is amazingly arcane, complex, expensive, and long. And most people, for a lot of people, especially if you're fleeing extreme violence, that's simply not an option. The immigration system is broken. We have to fix it. We need comprehensive immigration reform. I think good people, both on the right, on the left, conservatives and liberals, all agree on that. We all want a system that's safe, humane, that's orderly, that reflects the spirit of the rule of law in our country, and that reflects our best ideals as Americans.
Because one of the things that people, as you mentioned, whether they're on the left or on the right, if they meet someone and you know, this person is an immigrant and this person has no idea that perhaps they're an immigrant, they become good friends and they realize, hey, this person is okay. He's a human just like you and I. And these are some of the things that I think that the rhetoric is causing a lot of walls being put up before a real wall is put up.
You're right. And I think that's what was so troubling about President Trump's characterization of Mexicans as criminals, because it gave it sort of enabled us to begin to demonize parts of our population, to demonize other people, to see them not as human beings with human dignity, with rights, with things to contribute, with gifts and talents, people who have children, people who want to better their lives, who want a better life for their children, who want to contribute to their communities, who want to work hard. That's who the immigrant population in our country is. They're people who just want a better life for them children. They serve in our armed forces. They go to our schools. They have children. They work hard. They contribute to our economy. And so rhetoric, which enables us to see immigrants as illegal or as the other or as criminals, I think that that really has no place in the public square. And all of us, whether, again, we're conservatives or liberals, I think we have to push back against that and say, no, these are our fellow citizens. They're fellow residents of our country. We're all descended from immigrants. We have all gone through the immigrant experience in our families. And these are our neighbors, and they're people just like us who are seeking a better life.
And sometimes, as you mentioned, you know, people can come forward, but at the same time, because of things that have been happening since the previous administration, people are afraid to come forward.
Yeah, a lot of people are in the shadows. Families who have a member who is an unauthorized immigrant, they really live in a constant fear of separation. And, you know, the burden, unfortunately, of deportation and immigration enforcement is really shouldered disproportionately by children. Right now, there are 4 million U.S.-born children in the United States who have a parent who is an unauthorized immigrant. There are 1.1 million children who themselves are unauthorized immigrants or who have unauthorized immigrant parents. And nearly three-fifths of these unauthorized immigrants, they've lived in our communities for over a decade. So a lot, most of these people are not recently alive to have no connection to our U.S. society. They're men, women, children, families who are already part of the fabric of our communities.
If you wouldn't mind sharing with us, Dylan, perhaps a website that the Hope Border Institute has or a phone number that they can contact you if they have additional questions about some of the services that you have to offer?
Yeah, we're online. So Hope Border Institute is, you can find us on the web at hopeborder.org. And we're also on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter at Hope Border.
And this is also in Juarez. You serve Juarez, El Paso, and Las Cruces. Right?
Correct. We work in the three communities.
Well, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be with you and your listeners.
We were visiting with Dylan Corbett. Dylan is the executive director of the Hope Border Institute, Instituto Fronterizo Esperanza, Ciudad Juarez, El Paso, and Las Cruces. And again, if you have additional questions, perhaps comments that you'd like to address to Dylan, you can go to their Facebook page or their online as well, Hope Border Institute. The views expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KTEP. Again, Dylan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Luis Tejas. Our producer is Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.